Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
One bucket to keep its season alive. Gillespie from the out of bounds to the freshman Queen, who's driving, floats it. Oh! Maryland on the right side of a buzzer beater with life into the Sweet 16.
Greetings, sports fans. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Today is Wednesday, March 26th. This is episode 161. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. We're posting stuff all over the place. Give us a like, give us a share. Take that post, share it with everybody. We want it out there. Feel free to join our pages. And if you leave us comments, we'll get back to you. So leave us some comments, thoughts. If you got a comment on a game, tell us what you think. Tonight we go around the world of sports. Before we get to the March bracket madness, we'll talk round one and two games. We'll give you thoughts, analysis stuff, and then we'll get on to Sweet 16 matchups. We saw just about every minute of every game the first 2 days, so we'll go into it a little bit for you. Let's go around the world of sports. So we'll start with baseball. Opening day tomorrow in the United States is how I will phrase it, because we already had the two games in Japan. Yankees home, Mets on the road. Couple of things going on. One sad note before we even get started with that, and that is our condolences to Brett Gardner's family after the loss of his 14-year-old son, who passed away unexpectedly on a family vacation, of all things. Thoughts and prayers go out to the Gardner family. Guys.
Oh, that was devastating to hear that. Especially the three of us, we all have teenagers at home. And my goodness, to lose your 14-year-old on a vacation.
Just devastating. Just,
who knows what the cause was.
Yeah.
I mean, words can't express sorrow for Brett Gardner and his
family. Parent should ever bury a child.
Yep.
Nope. I don't care how old they are.
All right.
I don't care if it's 80 and 60. Should never happen.
Opening day tomorrow. Any thoughts, anything you want to throw out? We're going to do a baseball preview. We'll put it up early next week. But any thoughts on baseball starting up, guys?
Well, first and foremost, stop with the bull crap of starting this freaking season in Japan or Korea or Mexico or any other freaking country you can think of. It's America's pastime. It's a regionalized sport. People look forward to opening day. I used to look forward to watching the Reds be the first team to start every freaking season. There was something about it that would start it off in Cincinnati. The president throwing out a first pitch in Washington or Baltimore, depending on where it was at the time. Stop. Why? The NFL screws it up with their globalism. And now the MLB, you know, they're doing the same stupid thing. Nobody cares. Nobody's up. Nobody's going to get up in the middle of the night for baseball. They might for football. They won't for baseball.
And to make matters worse, tomorrow's games, the first game doesn't start till 3 o'clock.
Night games. Teams are off tomorrow. Two teams are off tomorrow. What the hell's going on? Everybody starts the same day.
What happened to the 1 p.m. start? Baseball starts. See, we got to wait until 3 o'clock in the afternoon for the first game to start. It's crazy stuff.
It's a bad look.
Kev, any other
March 27th, you're starting the season. I mean, just wait way too early. We're not through March Madness yet. Like I said, nobody cared about the series in Japan. Nobody cared.
No.
Did you wake up at 6 a.m. to watch it?
No.
And we're sports junkies, and we had no desire. I have a hard enough time waking up for the early part of the British Open, and I know it's going to start there.
Yeah. And
I have a hard time. I don't wake up for it early. Okay, I woke up for work. Here he is. It's on in the background. I mean, I know you're, as a Met fan, you might remember Tuffy Rhodes and all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I mean, who cares?
Nobody cares.
Yeah. All right, any other baseball points before we move on?
Well, it's interesting to see what's going to happen with Mookie Betts. He's lost, what, 20-something pounds? So glad I took him in the first round of my fantasy league. But hopefully he gains some weight back. The Yankees, who couldn't figure out what to do with Stroman, now are thankful that they have him, as him and Warren will be the 4-5. The Mets lose Blackburn today, who was fighting for that five spot. I don't think he had it, but
no, they announced already that he was going to be the lone man out of the bullpen. Yeah. McGill, you know, we know what he is. He's the fifth starter at best. Cannings looked solid in spring training. It's spring training, take it for what it's worth.
Maybe they have the clinic.
Maybe it's a miracle, you know, like
last year it worked, so I can't even insult it. But I don't know how you get a clinic to make bad pitches good. I know work for Manaea, so I'm not going to argue. And Severino had a bounce back.
To a degree, Severino and even Quintana a little bit.
I mean, Quintana.
We'll see what happens.
We'll go deeper into it when we do our baseball preview.
And the Yankees, just a feel-good story for them. You know, the kid makes the team. It was pretty cool to see J.C. Escara, substitute teacher, Uber driver, 29 years old, making the Yankees. They had the filming of him calling his mom. Couldn't believe it. We're going to New York. These are the kind of stories you love out of spring training. Yeah. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, less than a month later, they're back down. But, yeah, hopefully for the kid, he gets to stick it for a couple of years and make his money, because that'll be really cool. That was the feel-good story. Again, the Yankees, you know, you're thankful for the signing of Fried because of all the injuries to the staff. Without Fried, you don't even know where you'd be with this rotation.
Yep.
You know, making fun of the Met rotation right now. Top to bottom, the Mets might be stronger than the Yankees. Where in the beginning of the season, you didn't think that it's that close where you can mention it.
We've got Clay Holmes going opening day. It can't be that strong.
Listen, you got Clay looked great in the spring, so let's see what happens. It's that clinic. You know, a lot of excitement tomorrow. I hated that teams are off opening day. I hate that the games are at night. Some of them. I hate that they're trying to make this sport less regionalized. Gino, when we were kids, and even before we knew Kev, by the way, you went to opening day almost every. You take off. It was like a holiday for you in school when we were little kids. We went to grammar school. Me and Gino know just since we were five. So you would take off. Your uncle would take you every year.
My grandfather. My grandfather used to get box seats, basically about 12 rows behind third base, and he would take me and my two brothers every opening day. That was basically what he used to tell my mother. It's his day. That's his day. He's taking his three grandchildren at that time. And we used to go every opening day, and it was a lot of fun. And it was a whole big party kind of situation, but it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And even with crowded Yankee Stadium traffic, we were home by 4:35 o'clock most times. I just don't like the late start time. I think it's, you know, it's 3 o'clock. If you're lucky enough on the East Coast to get good weather for those games, you want to play them at 1 o'clock. You don't want the 3 o'clock start. So, all right, we'll move on. So we'll move over to the NHL for a couple of minutes. So Ovechkin now is 5 from tying, 6 from beating Gretzky's record. Caps have 11 games left, so he's within range still. We'll see if he actually winds up doing it.
I think he does.
So do I. But just out of curiosity, if he doesn't, do you think he comes back next season to do it?
Oh, 1,000%, yes.
Yeah, no doubt. He wants the record.
I agree.
I think he comes back next year regardless.
Well, maybe not.
I think it comes back. He's still performing at such a high level.
You know, and is next year the Olympic year?
Yes.
So I could see him, knowing he has that break in February, that'll be very elongated. It's not a horrible year to make your last year, especially. I don't know if Russia's allowed to play, though. I don't know how that Olympic's going to work next year. I don't know if Russia's still not going to be allowed to
I'm
play.
I'm not sure.
But I know he gets an extra. That's like a 3-week vacation in the middle of the season next year.
Yep. All right. Before tonight, Islanders and Rangers both tied at 74 points for ninth place in the standings. Islanders have played 70 games, Rangers 72, coming down to the wire. Thoughts, Kev?
Shocking to watch the Islanders playing this well since the trade deadline. You know, I wanted them to sell. They made the one major trade, but only one trade to get rid of Brock Nelson. And all of a sudden, this team started to play a lot better. I don't know what happened. And, you know, the other night, just brutal robbed of a point when the referee overturned Palmieri's goal. Palmieri's standing outside the crease. The goalie comes up and bumps him, and then he gets called for goaltender interference. That was one of the worst calls I've seen all damn year. And the fact that Toronto couldn't overturn that, the control center up there, if you're not going to overturn that, get rid of the damn replay because it's worthless.
You sound like Patrick Roy there, Kev.
Roy was
right. Said exactly the same thing.
Yes, that's where I got it from. That's why I sounded so prepared.
Who needs Toronto?
Who needs Toronto? I mean, come on. How is that not a goal?
No, it should have been a goal. I don't get it.
Come on. He's outside the crease. The goalie pushed him. And then they got to call Palmieri for the interference? Bullshit.
That's bad.
And they're 1 point behind. That's a point that would have put them tied with Montreal for the last playoff spot. Ridiculous. Every point matters right now. Of course, you look at the other end. Look at the other side. Just what they've done all year. They had a 2-0 lead in the first period and blew it because that's the Islanders all year.
Listen. But the Islanders are at least climbing. The Devils are trying to hang on for dear life with only 10 games left. And the Rangers tied with the Islanders, but the Islanders have 2 games in hand, even though they had a 2-1 lead tonight and they're now down 3-2. Hopefully they can turn it back around. But the Rangers are sinking fast. And, listen, the East is crazy, right? So the Caps have clinched. They're the only team that have clinched. But the Canes, Lightning, Panthers, Leafs, they're locks. They're all in. Devils have the 6. Right now the Senators and Canadians are 7-8, 1 point ahead of the Islanders, who have 12 games left. The Rangers have 10. The Blue Jackets are 1 point behind those two. They have 12 games left. The Red Wings are 11 games left, and they're 1 point behind the Jackets. Then the Bruins and the Penguins at 69 points. So they're basically 6 points back. It's going to be a close race. You know, you got to be impressed with the way the Islanders have come on. But the way the Rangers have fallen apart is the complete opposite. I mean, they made moves to solidify at the break. They didn't try to they didn't trade Brock Nelson. They didn't trade any of their players of that ilk. And these guys, it's just time to make changes. A year ago, you're saying, oh, they're probably just right there and they just missed it. But this happens in hockey every year. Then all of a sudden the next year, the team's not very good and you got to dismantle it. It's just kind of funny how it works out. And that's where we sit in the East. I mean, the Rangers don't look like a playoff team right now.
Well, every time you turn around, just when you start thinking, okay, they've won 2 in a row, they're unbeaten in 3, you start thinking, okay, they're going to start going. Then all of a sudden they turn around and lose 2 or 3 straight games. Yeah. They're just the ups and downs that they've had. They can't get a good 5, 6, 7, 8 game stretch here. And they're running out of time to put that together.
The funny part is that this is a team that nobody would want to see in the 8th spot because you fear that Igor could get hot. Igor's been very good this year, but he just hasn't been great. And for the Rangers to do anything, Igor has to be great, and he just hasn't. You haven't seen this Shesterkin that you saw last couple of years. At the same point, you look the same way at the Islanders, but the Islanders just have less. Sorokin's just as talented and just outstanding. He just doesn't have as much talent around him. So, Shesterkin, you expect he does enough and the Rangers put the puck in the net and everybody wins. Sorokin can play lights out and lose 2-1, 1-0 every night. That's the difference between the Islanders and the Rangers. As for the Devils, the injuries have really gotten to them. Got off to that great start. Now they're just, it's like a horse fading down the stretch, waiting for that finish line to come. Just get me in. If I can get the 6th seed, great. If it ends up being the 8th seed, fine. I just got to get myself back into the playoffs. But they're not a factor without Jack Hughes. They're just not. Yeah. And all these other teams are fighting hard. So we'll see what happens.
All right.
Out West, just to cover it real quick, the Jets have clinched. The Stars, Avalanche, Vegas, L.A., Edmonton, they're all fine. They're all going to be real good. And it all comes down to the 7 and 8 spots out there as well. Minnesota's got 85 points with 10 games to play. St. Louis, 83 points with 9 games to play. Somehow the Flames, 79 points with 12 to play. Vancouver, 78 points with 11 to play. And they're going right now against the Islanders. And then Utah still in the hunt a little bit too. So the Flames with the games in hand technically have a shot. You just feel like, as a Flame fan, if they get in and they go up against Winnipeg, I don't believe they win a game. I believe that it's a 4-game-to-none sweep, and I don't know if it's better to make the playoffs and get swept or just keep your pride. I probably want to make the playoffs just so that the young players get it, but I don't even know if that's the right answer, G.
Oh, always better to make the playoffs.
I guess. I just don't expect much.
From the team.
Hopefully the Islanders find their way in for us, though, because they're playing hard. they can come back tonight, it'll be really, really good.
From a team aspect, playoff revenue. Always make the playoffs. That's your first step, always. Always. All right, we'll move over to the NFL. Just a couple of quick points. So Stephon Diggs signed with the Pats, 3 years, $26 million. And the Giants signed yet another quarterback, bringing in Russell Wilson after they had already brought in Jameis Winston. So, Darren.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Giants are trying to do. Okay, so I don't know what the plan is now at three. There was a funny meme out there after they signed Winston that – You know,
your cousin Chris posted that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Travis Hunter. You get him for the interceptions as the defensive back, and you get him for the touchdowns as the wide receiver, which I thought was pretty good.
He could play wide receiver on Jameis's good passes and defensive back on his bad passes.
Absolutely. And it's like Wilson gets 1 year, 10.5. Winston gets 2 years for $8 million. I guess that I don't think they're going to trade up for Ward anymore. It doesn't make any sense for them to do it. Not that I think that that Tennessee was given that spot up. I don't believe they're sold on Will Levis. Anyway, they made some nice pieces in the offseason on the defense with Akiebo and Holland, but I just don't know what it is they're trying to accomplish with signing both of these quarterbacks. I would have went with one and made him my guy, and then, you know, maybe looked. I've seen mocks where they trade back in late in the first round to get Jackson Dart, somebody like that. Maybe it makes sense there. I don't know why you would need two quarterbacks to compete that,
all right, so
frankly aren't really all that special, that nobody would really want to start for their team right now.
So I agree with you, but the Jameis contract is so small that it could be, and this is the way I'm going to phrase it, that they still may draft a quarterback at three.
Oh, they could.
A la Shedeur Sanders, and wind up cutting Jameis in training camp. Well, I think part of this is after last year's quarterback debacle, they didn't want to get caught with no other quarterbacks on the roster. Just my opinion. I can't tell you if I'm right or wrong, but I think after last year, between, you know, everybody going down and Locke and DeVito, they got caught so bad that they didn't want to be in that same position. Now, on the other side, though, if you're keeping all these quarterbacks and you're drafting a quarterback, what the hell are you doing? I mean, you know, and my only other point, though, is if the plan is to not draft a quarterback now at three, I don't know. What are they hoping for? 6 wins? 7 wins? I mean,
in that division, it's going to be hard to do.
It's Russell Wilson at 36 years old. This isn't a 27-year-old quarterback. This is Russell Wilson at 36, Jameis Winston, who we know is not really a starter in this league. So I don't know. If they're not drafting a quarterback still, it doesn't have to be the first round, but if they're not drafting a quarterback with their first couple of picks, I don't know what – I honestly have no clue what they're trying to do.
Unless they really love Arch Manning or whoever it is coming out next year and they're saying, hey, listen, we're going to sit there and put out a journeyman. That's why I would have stuck with Winston, by the way. Just why spend the extra $10 million on Winston? I'm being honest. I mean, Winston might win you 4 games, but he's going to lose you another 8 to 10.
I just don't know
the plan for the Giants. And they did make a couple of nice defensive moves. I just don't know. I don't see the reason to have these two guys come in and compete for the starting job. It's just my take on it.
Yeah, I said last time we had the podcast, it said at least Jameis would make the Giants fun to watch.
Yeah, well, Russell.
You never know which way he'd go.
Russell won't. Well, I mean, this team is not going to be competitive. Yeah. And I hate to say it like this because everybody loves to rip on this guy, but Dak's not a horrible quarterback, and Dallas will be more competitive with him this year. I'm not saying that they're going to win the division. Washington has already taken steps ahead. Philly's the defending champ, and you're going to go out there with Russell Wilson, who down the stretch for Pittsburgh in a playoff push, couldn't do a thing. With a talented defense. And they were getting blown out of those games.
If you signed either Wilson or Jameis Winston and drafted a quarterback, and basically one of those guys started 3-4 games or whatever to get the rookie a little confidence in himself, I get it. I don't get the two quarterbacks. You got me. We're gonna have to see how this plays out.
like I said, it's a waste of money for Wilson, I think. You save that all that money by not signing him. Even if you don't apply it this year, you can roll it over to next year with the salary cap and this and that. I mean, save it for another day.
Russell
Wilson is not making a difference on this team.
Yep, I agree.
I would have added some more talent around. I mean, that's just one of those things. And then the only other thing I got to say in the NFL is, you really, it's going to come down to where the Jets and Giants are looking in the draft. And we'll go through the whole draft. We'll do a little bit of a preview in a couple of weeks down the line. The Jets brought in Tyler Johnson, who was a nice wide receiver as a fourth wide receiver at LA. And he's just on a very stacked team, so you don't see much. Brought in Myers, the center from Green Bay, for a little depth up front. Brought in Derek Nnadi, who stops the run normally. Not great last year for the Chiefs. So they added a couple of guys. And now we'll see if they go with – I'd love them to get Mason Graham. I don't think he falls to them. But if it's Tyler Warren or Armand Membo or McMillan from Arizona, you know, or the offensive tackle from LSU, I'm blanking on his name.
Campbell.
Yep.
Will Campbell. Yep.
So for one of those guys, for the Giants, it looks like all signs point to Hunter being the guy. I mean, and you can't argue with it.
Cleveland.
What?
If he gets by Cleveland. I don't know if Cleveland is going to take Sanders.
Oh, I don't think Cleveland takes Sanders either. I just don't know if I don't know. I feel like Cleveland has to do something to help that offensive line a little bit too. And so there's a lot out there right now to see what happens. Hopefully, both of these teams are able to do something. We'll get more into it as we go.
All right. Yep. We'll head over to the NBA. So Knicks at 45-26 before we start today. Kev, any NBA points?
Well, first time in Knicks history, at Cat and Hart both have triple doubles in the one the other night. You know, they've been treading water here without Brunson. It's just they need to get Brunson back, hopefully with 5 or 6 games left. I mean, they're all getting down to about 10 games left in the NBA.
Yep.
You get him back with 5 or 6 games left, get his feet back under him, have him gear up for the playoffs. And, yep, you know, that's going to be the way the Knicks are going to win, is by outscoring teams, because his defense has just been awful.
Yeah.
It's very non-Tibbs-like, and they brought in guys that are supposed to be these wing defenders like Bridges and Ananobi, and it has not happened. You knew Brunson was a liability defensively. Cat, probably a little bit more of a liability defensively than I realized to a certain extent. Yep. You thought you'd stop the wings. The problem is that they can't even move one of the wings in to stop a point guard. A point guard can get anywhere they want against this team. Saw it in the playoffs last year with Maxey. You see it now, and Brunson on one wheel is bad, on two wheels was bad enough. On one wheel, it's tough to watch. It looks like the teams are pretty well set though in the East. The 10 teams have kind of pulled away. The West is 11 teams fighting for 10. It really comes down to the Suns, the Mavs, and the Kings for the two of the last three. Everybody else is kind of falling off, unless you think the Blazers have a run in them left with 10 games left. And
OKC's already clinched the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you're looking at, you know, you have some nice first round matchups with Pacers have taken a couple game lead over the Bucks. So now the Bucks and the Pistons are fighting who has to get to play the Pacers and who gets to play the Knicks. That's really what it comes down to. The Knicks are pretty well locked into having to play the Celtics, which means that they don't advance much further than they did last year, unfortunately, barring a really nice upset. And you're looking at Lakers, Grizzlies, Nuggets, Warriors in the West with those matchups kind of set, or not completely set, but getting close to being set out there. So NBA, like we said, as we get into the playoffs, we'll break it down a lot more, matchups in the for the playoffs. Right now it looks like there's 21 teams for 20 spots. East set, West with one spot really to fight for between the Kings, Mavs, and Kings, Mavs, and the Suns.
Phoenix Suns, yeah.
Yep.
In boxing, we lost a boxing legend last week. George Foreman died at the age of 76. Won 2 heavyweight championships, one against Joe Frazier, 1973. He won a gold in the 1968 Olympics. He obviously fought in the famous Rumble in the Jungle match with Muhammad Ali. And then he seemed to have a second career when his George Foreman grill in 1994 hit a record of 100 million grills sold in his first 25 years of existence. So he had a second career after boxing. Darren, Kevin, any comments about one of the greats in boxing passing away?
Well, we were a little too young to watch his first career. You know, but of course, you know, the Rumble of the Jungle, he was 40-0 going into that match with Ali. That was the first time he was down and, you know, came back, beat Frazier, like you said, beat Frazier for the first. I mean, that was a golden age with Foreman and Frazier and Ali, and even throw Ken Norton in there too as a terrific fighter.
Absolutely.
Lost to Jimmy Young in 77, was exhausted, dehydrated, everything else, said, decided, okay, I'm done. Became an ordained minister. And then 10 years later, came back to help raise money for his children's center there. And wound up, you know, won his first 24 fights back. Lost a unanimous decision to Holyfield. And then awful loss to Tommy Morrison. Had a championship fight against Michael Moore, which was supposed to be a tune-up for Moore. And you saw George Foreman's power. He caught him with one of those vicious rights to the, to the jaw there. Became the WBA and IBF champion at 45 years old. Final fight, he lost to Shannon Briggs. In a fight that he pretty much dominated, you know, a lot of people thought that he probably won the fight, but the judges gave it to Briggs, and he was done at 48 years old. Now, Darren and I had seen more of Foreman's second act because we were more into the boxing by that point. But overall, 76-5. And just a terrific. And then we saw him afterwards on HBO doing the commentating. And he was just fun to listen to.
Listen, he was the most powerful guy, or one of the most powerful hip hitters ever. It's really what it comes down to. You know, if he got you, you were the knockout of Moore, where Moore kind of dominated the fight, was outpointing him. And all of a sudden he just hit him, and Moore didn't know what to do with himself. You saw this throughout his entire career. He all he needed was one punch. Didn't sit down in the second version of his fight career because he didn't want to have to get up and down. Just stood there in the corner, leaned on the ropes, came back out, would throw a haymaker. Obviously, you know, didn't score well in those fights against Spinks, but those weren't easy for him in the fact that Spinks was just kind of staying away from him a little bit, right? It was that the Michael Spinks, didn't Michael Spinks kind of keep him at bay a little bit? I'm thinking of the wrong fighter. I'm thinking of the wrong fighter. My mistake. But Foreman.
You thinking Larry Holmes?
No. Who am I thinking of?
Ali.
It was not Leon. I think of Michael when he first came up, and I think it was Holmes that he kind of outpointed. But it's just one of those things where he just was just so strong. Nobody really wanted to go toe to toe with him. Classy guy, became very beloved, became very unliked in the beginning of his career a lot because of the way Ali kind of pitted him as a human being, and became much more likable in the second go around with his Foreman grill and his big smile. All his kids were named George, boys and girls, all the fun stuff that goes on with George Foreman.
SiriusXM had one of their hosts on the Fight Channel there who had a great retrospective of him. And he said growing up, or when he first came up into the pros, he was surrounded by, who was the other heavyweight? Oh, Sonny Liston's people, I think. And Sonny Liston's people, you know, sort of influenced Foreman, and Foreman thought he had to be this mean, nasty guy to be successful. And that wasn't really his personality. He sort of forced it that way. And then, like you said, Darren, with Ali playing up that role as well. You know, but when you saw the second half of his career and then all the other TV stuff, the personality came through.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, Darren, let's head over to horse racing.
One last thing. Yeah, lost another champion, Razai Bramble. You might know him as Livingstone Bramble. It was 1960. I mean, he was 64 years old. Died kind of young. He was a guy out of the U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Croix, was where he was raised. Had some legendary fights, though. I mean, He fought Boom Boom Mancini in the first CompuBox fight ever, by the way. Absolutely. And he won a close decision, but did win it. Fought guys like Alexis Arguello, Bobby Chacon. Supposed to fight Aaron Pryor, but it didn't really happen. That would have been a really good one. Beat Rocky Lockridge. You know, was supposed to fight Hector Camacho, but then lost a stunning fight to Edwin Rosario. Where he got knocked down twice in three rounds, but he had a great career for Freddie Pendleton, Charles Murray, took on everybody, Buddy McGirt, Roger Mayweather, Ruelas, Costa Zu, was sweating the ring against everybody that he could. Really just a very good fighter, Boom Boom was a very popular fighter back in the day, and he was the guy that kind of ended that little reign. But great career for Razai Bramble, Livingstone Bramble. Rest in peace to him.
All right. We'll head over to horse racing.
Yeah, we got two big ones this week, okay? So, again, you know, you have to qualify with points to get into the Derby. And these are two, like, mid-majors where the winner gets in because you get 100 points for it, okay? The Florida Derby, which has had some great horses over the years get through, from Barbaro to Big Brown and all these. It's been a really good prep, right? This one, the favorite is Sovereignty, coming off a really, really nice win last time out. Went from last to first in the stretch. Goes in at the 9-5 favorite. I like Mattaquette Road, who's 6-1 right now. If he can get out of the 8 spot, he would be a horse I would look at as the early speed. There's 3 speed horses in the race. He would be, if he can get out, I think he can win this race. Disruptor is a horse that just broke his maiden last time out, but did so in such impressive fashion that it'll be interesting to see if Irad Ortiz can get this horse up on the board as well. I would go 8-10-4 in this race. Arkansas Derby, very interesting favorite in Cornucopian, probably even money right now. Never ran more than 6 furlongs, so now you're stretching him out to 9. Makes me a little nervous, which means he will not have my bet. Horse we've talked about in the past, 2 of them that we talked about in the past, both Cold Battle and Sandman are in this race. Sandman 9-2, Cold Battle 5-1. Sandman a little bit more up front, Cold Battle a little bit more off the pace. I think Cold Battle finds a way. I think Cornucopian will get out. I just don't know if he can go the extra 3. If he does go the extra 3, he's going to be a very short odd favorite, I think, in the Derby. So just keep an eye on this horse as we go forward. I think Publisher, who's a maiden, is kind of like lined up for this race relatively well. He gets Pratt on this time. Could be a horse that you look at the 3. I'm going to take the 8 on top with the 6-3 and Cornucopian, who's the outside horse in this race. So there's just a couple things to watch for. Again, these are 2 major preps, right, Kev? I mean, these are 2 the winner gets in. The second place horse gets the 50 points that everybody else is fighting for wins in the other races. So this is just one to watch out for. You'll see multiple of these horses in the Derby.
Big, big weekend. Yep.
All right. And then we get to the madness. We started with 64 teams.
Started with 68.
Thursday, Friday, we got to 32. Saturday, Sunday, we got to 16. Let's tackle the local issue first, and then we'll go from there. We'll go into this. St. John's lost to Arkansas Saturday, failed to get to the Sweet 16. Why don't you give me a little talk first, and then we'll get into some.
You know, the St. John's did not play well. They did not shoot well, and they could not deal with Arkansas's length or athleticism, especially. You know, I saw the stat come up after the game. St. John's 2-for-22 on threes, and all year that's been one of their weaknesses.
Absolutely.
They were not a good outside shooting team, so that was not to be. You're not shocked by that stat.
Nope.
They were also 8-for-25 on layup attempts,
and that's a big problem.
So Arkansas's length bothered them. They did not face that in the Big East all year, you know, with that type of length and athleticism, and it caught up to them. Great year for St. John's. It's a shame it had to end that way. We would like to see them go another weekend here. Overall, great year, and you know, we'll see what Patino can do for next year. Yep. Darren, what do you think?
The big point on this one is the R.J. Lewis getting benched for the last few minutes of this game.
Yep.
And you know, very hard to argue with Patino. Very hard to argue with a guy that knows. And he had an awful shooting game. He was just horrendous. But you feel like, wow, when he left the game, they were down 2 and they lost by 8. You know, I'm not saying that Patino's wrong. I'm not even second guessing it. I just wanted to get your take on it because I've always been one. And listen, we saw it with the Knicks back in 94.
Starks.
Keep him out there. Let him keep shooting. 3-for-18. They lose game 6. Do you go down with your best player on the bench, the biggest player of the year on the bench? Because he did that. And then he got a little snippy with the reporter asking why he wasn't playing. He goes, you know why he didn't play.
Yeah.
You know what he shot. I'm not going to badmouth one of my players. I mean, I would have had Lewis out there. I was surprised they didn't. Gino?
All right. So 2 things. 1, Kadari Richmond, all of those fouls killed anything. He only wound up playing a 16 minutes in the game. He was 2 of 7, and they were lacking a leader on the floor. Now, aside from that, your RJ Lewis point, I will take issue with it because we say this all the time. I want to go down with my best, whether it's the closer in the ninth, whether it's throwing the ball to the all-star receiver. I want to go down with my best. I know RJ was horrible. He was 3 for 17.
Impressive.
He played 30 minutes. He only had 9 points. But you know what? That, unfortunately, before that game, he's your best shooter. You have to play. And listen, I get everything Pitino said. I don't agree with it. It's okay that I don't agree with it. I'm not going to agree with everything everybody says. But I want to go down with my best player on the floor. And if he misses, he misses. And I know I had my best team on the floor and I lost. But yeah, to have him on the bench for that whole period of time in the fourth is just like, it drove me mad. And would he have made a difference? Maybe not. I can't tell you, but I want to go down with my best on the floor. That's always how I've been. So, Kev?
Yeah, you know, when Lapis was doing the game and he's questioning why he's not in there, and I think it was almost too deferential, the fact that he would say, I would have Fred in there, but, you know.
Of course.
Pitino's a Hall of Fame coach. I'm not, so who am I to question Pitino? So I think that you got a little bit of that, too. It's, you know, it's Rick Pitino. You trust what he sees.
Listen, I think, yeah, I agree with you, Kev. I think all three of us would have had him in there. I would have went down swinging. I just thought it was an odd choice. The only guy that really seemed to show up in this game and play lights out was Zubi. I really think that Ejiofor, who again is really just a monster for this team, does a lot. He got Adu in foul trouble, which should have neutralized their shot blocking. But you look at this team. I know Arkansas is a 10, but let's remember, Arkansas has 5-star recruits. They have All-Americans.
Oh, yeah.
St. John's Red Storm or Red Men or whatever you want to call them, do not. Closest they had is Ejiofor, who's a Kansas transfer. This is a team where, you know, the sum of the parts is better than the individual talent. And you talked about the biggest point of the game. Calipari started campaigning all week for these fouls on Kadari Richmond, all weekend, talking about how they're so physical. And he got the calls. He whines. That's what Calipari does. That's what Calipari's done forever. Calipari's a little bit of a cheater. He's a little bit of a whiner. He's a little bit of an everything. He was a guy when he was at the University of Pittsburgh that was trying to steal recruits by saying Karnisek had cancer. He was that guy. He's not going to be there for all 4 years. He did the same thing to Temple with John Chaney. He did a lot of this stuff. Not the most likable guy. At the same point in time, he's a successful coach, and he does a likable interview. So you kind of catch him sitting there watching him, and he kind of makes you smile. But Arkansas as a 10 seed is not a 10 seed. They were a 10 seed in a brutal ace SEC that lost Boogie Flan for a while and had some other growing pains trying to put this roster together. G?
So I won't complain against them against Arkansas. My complaint is with not playing RJ Lewis for a good part of the end of this game. I mean, the officiating was bad on both sides. There were some horrible calls on both sides of the equation. So I'm not going to argue that, but you know, for me, it was tough seeing them lose without RJ on the floor after the year he's had. I'll put it to you that way.
Big East player of the year.
So, all right. So round one, anything you want to touch on in round one? So round one upsets, we had 12 beat fives. We had 11 beat the six. We had 2 10s beat sevens. Anything you want to touch on to start us off, Darren?
Yeah, when I look at it, you know, a couple of games stood out to me. St. Mary's coming back on Vandy was actually a really competitive game. I thought Arkansas-Kansas first-round game. Kansas turned it over 4 times in the last 2 minutes. That ended up becoming a really good game. UC San Diego, who looked dead in the water at the half, stormed back, had a chance to beat Michigan. McNeese, who had a dominant lead on Clemson, held down for near freaking
life. Trying to get out of the way.
Baylor, Mississippi State was actually an excellent game for a 9-8. It was supposed to be, and it was. Colorado State, Memphis was competitive. I mean, there were some good games. The thing that, and like you said, we had a couple of 12-5s, and but we also had some. What we're seeing now. Kevin, make your point. Nothing really blew me away in the first game. Kevin, make your point.
I mean, 12-5, Colorado State was actually favored over Memphis.
Yep. Because Memphis was missing their second top player.
The injury. That was the big thing.
And Hunter was out.
And before the tournament went off, you know, McNeese, I think, was a pretty popular 12.
Yep.
I saw a lot of love for Drake as an 11. Everybody was looking forward to the New Mexico Marquette game. And Arkansas, Kansas. I mean, I'm not calling that an upset.
Yeah.
I
gave it to you because it was a 10 over a 7, but
you have to do it by seed.
Listen, and Darren, you know, McNeese cost us a little money with the failure to contain Clemson down the stretch. Clemson got crazy hot. But go ahead. I know where you're going with this, Darren. I'm sorry, Kev.
But I was going to say, you know, the first round especially, you know, you go through, you circle. I had about six games circled that were, like, good.
That was it. I mentioned
bad games, and you mentioned them all.
Yeah.
The funniest part about this is that we sit there, and the pageantry and what makes the first round of the NCAA tournament so exciting, and sometimes even the second round, is the mid-major, is that team that's good, that's really good, that nobody sees, that's been playing together for 3 years or 4 years, that doesn't get, you know, every good player stolen from them after they have one good season. So what happens now is when we started watching this, Butler was a mid-major. Creighton was a mid-major. You know, you had teams like this that were not, you know, considered the top of the food chain, so to speak. You know, and Drake was more like a low major, right? You know, you sat there and you didn't even think about these teams. So now these mid-majors, Xavier was a mid-major. I mean, these were schools that we were banking on to be mid-majors. Then you get that MAC school where Wally Szczerbiak comes out of Miami, Ohio, and carries a team. Or Harold Arsenault does the same thing for Weber State, or Damian Lillard does the same thing out there as well. Or you get Mouse McFadden and Mackey coaching Cleveland State, and you get a couple of those stories. But the guys, it's a team of seniors going up against a team of young players that have more talent, and they find a way. But now with the NIL and the transfer, my fear is we may not get Cinderellas anymore. Listen, the SEC did everything they were supposed to do. They got seven teams to the Sweet 16. You want to rip on the SEC? You can't, because they got almost half of the field left in this tournament, right? It was, you know, listen, the only lower seed that really got through that was unexpected completely was Arkansas. And let's be honest, Arkansas played pretty well down the stretch, so it's not that big a stretch. But when you have every one get through, three of the four twos get through, you know? You got two threes got through. You got, three fours got through. 1-5, 2-6s, and a 10. So you're going to tell me Arkansas is that team you're dreaming about? Like, oh my goodness, how do they get through? I mean, no, because they have nothing but talent on the squad. So there's no – listen, we have great matchups up and down the line this weekend, but the majesty's gone. The Cinderella, the little dream of a George Mason doesn't even look like it's going to be possible going forward, Kev. Just doesn't look like it.
We you know, the seven SECs. Four Big Ten, four Big 12, and Duke.
Yeah.
And that's your tournament. That's what's left. And just terrible games all around. I mean, the very first game of the tournament, the first four, Alabama, St. Francis. Alabama with the Hail Mary pass down court, and they were able to – I mean, Alabama State, not Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely.
They scored the last second field goal there to pull off the 70-68 win. We never saw another buzzer beater until late in the second round, when we had Maryland pull off the win against Colorado State on a buzzer beater.
Thoughts on the travel on that? I wouldn't have called it. I'm just asking. I think I see it every single time they drive now. I don't think Queen did anything completely wrong. It's very hard to say when he gathered. But I technically, it would probably be three steps. I wouldn't have called it.
It was probably three, depending on exactly when he took the gather. But the way the game is called now, where you see four or five steps not called.
And I was rooting for Colorado State at that moment, so it wasn't like I was sitting there on the Maryland bandwagon hoping he got it. I was like, well, I hope they hold on. They had a great three. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kev. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, I think we're done, at least with my point there. You know, between there was no other buzzer beater.
So, Darren, you mentioned the point, which is a lot of these mid-majors are not in the mid-major conferences anymore. NIL, transfer protocol, all of this stuff adds up to exactly what you said, which is we are probably not going to have many Cinderella's in, as this tournament continues, unless something changes, unless we see some of these guys staying with some of these mid-major teams for 3 years.
Just to put it in perspective, all right, and the portal has to start Monday because college basketball doesn't know what to do with themselves. Rather than keeping it extending and keeping their season going, they do it while we're in the middle of this tournament. Karis Bilal-Avandi entered the portal 13 minutes after they lost to St. Mary's. 13 minutes. His team just lost. He enters the portal 13 minutes later.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
This is ridiculous now. Now it's out of hand.
Yeah.
And you know, but what it does is it raids all the good mid-majors. So you're not going to be, you know, listen, Drake has made three hires in 3 years, and they've all been really good, and they lost McCollum again. So yeah. Now they have to go try to make a fourth hire. How does this AD have to do that? It's so hard to go 4-for-4. Utah State has had 4 or 5. This will be their 5th hire in 6 years. I mean, these guys, they get crushed every single year. You have success in the mid-major, you lose your coach, and then you lose your players. If not, then you just lose your players and your coach stays.
McNeese is losing weight.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He went to NC State already. I already have all the coaching changes. It's ridiculous. And there's still a couple left to go. But I fear that the tournament's majesty and the magic that we loved about it is starting to kind of dwindle away. I'm sorry, Kev.
It's the NIL. It's the transfers. Yeah. It's big conferences, but TV's killing it too.
Of course.
We grew up where we also were limited to basically one or two stations, unless we were in Vegas to get all four. But these games were so closely timed that you would have two or three games at once coming down to the final couple of minutes, and you saw the excitement. Oh, we're gonna switch here. We're gonna switch there. The chaos of everything going on. Now they've got everything so spread out the first 2 days. How many times were we watching that there was absolutely no action going on because this one's in halftime, this one's at a commercial, this game is over, waiting for the next one.
And then particularly the early session's a nightmare. Then the late one you could live with. The early session's a freaking nightmare.
And then the weekend's worse.
The weekend's a joke.
Yeah. You have a game at 12. You have a game at 2:30. A game at 5. And then you start getting some overlaps around 6 or 6:30.
Yeah.
And after spending 12 hours Thursday and Friday, now they want you to commit another 12 hours Saturday and Sunday.
Which we did.
We did it.
Which we did Thursday and Friday.
But married folks, it's not easy. You know, your wife does not understand. If Kevin's wife is more into college hoops than mine and Gino's, okay?
We were in Lake City. I got a text from my wife. What channels are the games on? Because she can sit in front of her laptop with her laptop in front of the TV Friday.
I feel very confident saying that. I know I didn't, and Gino did not get that same text. I can feel very confident knowing your wife and mine that did not happen.
My wife is a saint.
Absolutely not. Oh, my wife's a saint too. My wife's a saint. Trust me.
She just doesn't want to watch it. She just doesn't understand. She's in the pool. She makes her picks. She just, hoping for Arizona to go all the way. But, whatever it may be. But, yes, you're right. The TV does ruin it. And also, it just seems like right now it's so favored heavily for the people that are spending money, and the NIL money is going to go to the super colleges. They're going to get the recruits. They're going to get the NIL players. And to be honest, recruitment day isn't even as big as it used to be.
Yeah,
because now outside of like top 50 players, nobody really cares. Patino's line was, "I can't replace the guys I have to replace with freshmen." And I got to go out and get seniors. Yep.
I got one comment about the TV stuff, and Kev hit it right on the button. And if they wanted to do that Friday, Kev, I could almost live with it. But Thursday at 12 o'clock, everybody is hyped up to get going with the tournament. And we got one game for like 45 minutes before the second game starts. Give me at least two games to start. It wasn't good. I'll put that one.
Saturday and Sunday, if you want to sit there and tell me we're going to have one game at 12 and then three at 2 and then two more at 5 and two more at 7, I can almost live with it if you want to have one feature game. That's but having two feature games, and you know you're putting – I mean, listen, it worked out for them with Florida and Connecticut, but it didn't work out with them with Duke and Baylor, did it?
Oh, no. My God. I think I had a different game to watch at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, but it didn't work out there. There was nothing there at 240. That was it. That was it if you watched the men's game. That was it.
Yeah.
You had no other options. And it's not from Baylor not trying. They just, they're big man 6'7". They can't compete with Duke's size. They just couldn't do it. So it was a matchup that had no chance of being successful, yet they put it on its own because they thought that Duke would carry the day. And what they do is they hurt themselves.
And I can't watch Duke. Unless they're losing, I cannot watch Duke.
Listen, they're a really talented team. They might be the best team in this tournament, but I don't root for the Duke. Is one of those teams. It's like the Yankees. Either you like them or you hate them. There's no indifference.
Yep.
All right, so 16 teams left. We got 8 games. Anything jump out at you of these games, guys?
Yes. I hate what's happening in the Midwest.
Good.
Okay, so now Houston has to play Purdue in Indianapolis. How does the 1 seed have to play a road game at the 4 seed? Okay? Yeah. Tennessee has to play against Kentucky in Indianapolis, who's 180 miles away, 189 miles away. I'm exaggerating. How does Tennessee, the 2 seed, have to play a road game at the 3? Okay, everybody else, the ones that Duke gets to play exactly where they want to every single time,
oh, of course.
They'll never stop it, right? Florida got shipped out to San Francisco, which I didn't agree with, but whatever. Texas Tech, Arkansas, no big deal. Alabama's in Newark with BYU. Technically, they'll have more home fans, okay? But Atlanta gets Auburn, okay? That makes perfect sense. But how in the world?
Yeah.
How in the world do you take the 1 and the 2 and put them at the 3 and 4? How does Purdue get a 4 home game against Houston? Now, I think Houston's the better team, and I think they should win, but it's still a road game. If this game was at Mackey, you wouldn't feel that confident because it's in Indianapolis. You give them a shot, but come on, committee. This is a joke. I thought it would be a joke early, but I had Purdue get knocked off, but they didn't get knocked off. They actually played quite well, and now Houston has to play a road game. Tennessee basically has to play a road game.
Which one of these games do you think has the best chance for an upset?
What's an upset? is it a lower seed?
A lower seed beating a higher seed, because that's the only way I could represent it at this moment in time, Kev. So I'll go through them. So Auburn versus Michigan. Do you think
Michigan? I give Michigan a chance. I give them a bunch of chance because they have the 2 7-footers. I don't think they win it, but I give them a shot.
I think
it's a close game. I think Auburn prevails.
Okay. Michigan State, Ole Miss.
Ole Miss has played great in this tournament, except for one half against UNC. Michigan State has got probably a little bit more depth. Ole Miss has more seniors. I think it's a competitive game. I think if Ole Miss can hit shots, I think Ole Miss can win this game. I think Michigan State finds their way through, but I think it's close again.
That's probably a 5-point game, yep.
Maryland against Florida.
I think Florida got their scare. I think Maryland's young, and I think Florida finds a way to. I think it's competitive early. I think Florida pulls away.
Let's be honest. Florida had to play the 2-time defending national champion as an 8 seed. I mean, that couldn't have been any more unfair to Florida.
The only team close to that was Houston, having to play Gonzaga in that same spot, which is a weird place to play.
Yeah. And then just another reason to hate Hurley. See him after the game?
Oh, he's a crybaby.
As he's walking to the back and he sees the other players coming out. I hope they don't F you as much as we got F'd out there.
With the calls, yep.
I mean, it's like, come on, watch that game. I didn't see any real bias.
There's nothing egregious. There was nothing egregious to complain about.
All right.
I think Florida pulls away, though, in that one.
Arkansas, Texas Tech.
To me, this is a toss-up game. I think Arkansas probably wins it, but I think it's a toss-up game. Texas Tech, we watched in the first round, shoot up 46 threes. I think Arkansas is a little bit better defensively than the teams that Texas Tech has played so far. Texas Tech is normally good defensively as well. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game in the 50s, maybe early 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate to say I agree, but, yeah, I really think Arkansas has a real good chance here of getting through.
Do you give Arizona a chance versus Duke?
No.
The thing is, Arizona, the one player Duke probably didn't want to see was Caleb Love, the Carolina transfer. And now he comes in as an Arizona player who hates Duke. That might be the only advantage. If Caleb Love has an incredible game, Arizona's got the size. They've got the athletes to match up. They're just not as talented. But the fact is that Caleb Love could be a difference maker, and he's the only fifth-year senior really on the court.
BYU at Alabama.
This is a game that first to 100 wins, I think. I think that this, at least 90. This is a high-scoring game, not a lot of defense. Both offenses are really good.
Look, I just think, over.
I you know, the over is like 175, G. I mean, this is a real over. I mean, this is 175 and a half last I saw. I mean, this is like, I was nervous about 167. This is 175.
Both teams are averaging 85 of the tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And they're expecting to score even more because of the lack of defense. Wisconsin almost came back on BYU. That was actually a relatively good ending in that game.
It was.
Kanjay missed the shot. But I think that Alabama will get through, but I think it'll be a really – I think it'll be a competitive game.
And then the aforementioned Midwest Conference – Midwest part of the bracket. So Purdue and Houston in Indianapolis.
I still think Houston gets through.
I do too. I just don't understand how they get the draw of a road game.
Yeah. And then the 2-3, Tennessee, Kentucky.
Kentucky's beaten them twice this year.
Yeah.
I think Tennessee finds a way to get revenge here, but it could go either way. Kentucky's been good in this tournament. They did a good job against Illinois. They blew out Troy. Tennessee, same way. They blew out Wofford and they blew out UCLA, even though that game ended up being close. They were up 16-17 in the second half in a low-scoring game. I think Tennessee and Houston both get through, but I think they're both going to be more competitive than they should be.
Rick Barnes in the Sweet 16 is scary.
Oh, yeah. You don't trust Rick in a spot like this. We don't know what Mark Pope is yet.
The Sports Kings from Queens official bracket still has three of the final four. Both finalists and the winner still available. So
I don't want to talk about my individual bracket.
You're doing better than I am, so shut up.
I have to root for Duke now.
Would you like to mention anything with the women's?
Sure. You thought the men's were chalky. the way the women's, especially, you know, all the top four seeds play at their home court in the first two rounds. And as a result, all four ones, twos, threes, 1-4, and 3-5s. In the first round, there were exactly 2 10-7 upsets. I'm not counting 9-8 as upsets. I'm not counting 5s and 4s as upsets. So for two rounds, 2 upsets. Unbelievably chalky. And some of these scores, 108-48, 105-61, 101-66. And, of course, UConn in the first round over Arkansas State, 103-34.
Yeah, it sucks.
I mean, it's just not even competitive.
And you want me to watch women's college. Tell me this.
You even get to the second round, 16 games. 5 of them were single digits. 5 of them were 30 or more.
And we're gonna get to the Juju Watkins in a second. But her second round game, you know, she gets hurt in the first period. They still win the game by 37 points.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, against a 9 seed. I mean, the parity isn't there yet in this sport.
No. I mean, there's more parity at the top. The fact that I think this is wide open. You've got – right now you're looking at 8, 9, 10 teams that can win this, which is a lot more than usual. But, again, the difference between the haves and the have-nots is incredible. Darry mentioned Juju watching that game in the first quarter. And when she went down on the break, she tries to squeeze by two defenders. That knee gave out. She went down. And right away, we all know from history of women's basketball players, we all knew that was an ACL right then and there.
Yeah. The death threats that the girl from Mississippi State's receiving for making contact is a joke, by the way. This can't happen. She's not trying to hurt her. She's not trying to hurt her.
I didn't see anything on that. That
there really was nothing. She's just trying to move with her.
Trying to hurt her.
She's trying to move with a better athlete, and they bumped, but it wasn't anything. There was nothing egregious on the play.
Nope. So hopefully, coming to the Sweet 16, hopefully the games get better.
Couple of quick things on just coaching changes with men's, just so everybody's up to date. Darren DeVries goes from West Virginia to Indiana, replacing Mike Woodson. Luke Laux goes to Florida State, replacing Leonard Hamilton. Ben McCollum leaves Drake, even though they offered him a huge raise, biggest money they've ever offered. They couldn't keep him. He goes to Iowa, replacing Fran McCaffrey, which I didn't understand the firing of McCaffrey. I thought he's had a pretty good run over there. Miami, Larinaga stepped down. Jai Lucas steps in. Minnesota takes Nico Medved from Colorado State, replaced Ben Johnson. NC State, you talked about it before. Will Wade comes in to replace Kevin Keats. Texas, Rodney Terry gone. Sean Miller in. Utah, Craig Smith gone. Alex Jensen in. Virginia, Ron Sanchez gone. Ryan Odom from VCU goes in. His father, Dave Odom, coached Wake for all those years, was Terry Holland's number one assistant at Virginia for a long time with Samson there. Richard Pitino leaves New Mexico to go to Xavier. Non-power, just to mention him, Phil Martelli Jr. goes from Bryant to VCU. Josh Pastner leaves the broadcast booth to head the UNLV to replace Kevin Kruger. The only power spots that are open are Villanova and West Virginia right now. And the rumors are all strong that Kevin Willard's going to Nova. Because he wants to be, again, guys, the whole thing with the NIL money, and it's not a bigger job, but all of Villanova's NIL money will go to basketball.
Yeah.
Maryland's NIL money will go to football and basketball. And I think that the coaches sometimes don't like to share that. So this becomes a pure basketball job if that happens. Now, again, we don't know for sure, but that's what the rumor is. West Virginia was supposedly, I'm trying to remember who the coach was. I think it's Utah State's coach that's supposed to be heading over there. That hasn't been announced yet. New Mexico, we'll see what happens. I mentioned the transfer portal just being brutal, by the way. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever.
This is as bad as the football doing through both season and going in through the playoffs.
Extend your season. Make college basketball exciting into April by having it right after the championship. You want to do it the Tuesday after? Fine.
Go for it. Yep.
Izzo went nuts. He's like, listen, I have a chance to give these kids dreams for the rest of their lives of winning a Sweet 16 game where they get a chance to talk about it with their kids and their grandkids and their great-grandkids. I can't focus on this now. I can't focus until my season's done. And he's right.
He is right.
He's 100% right. Yep. Crazy. I have one last little point, not basketball related, if that's all right, just to jump in. Carlin Pickens, University of Tennessee softball pitcher. 78.2 miles per hour. Fastest pitch ever thrown from 43 feet away. The equivalent from 60 feet 6 inches. 109 miles per hour.
Wow.
I want to see somebody hit that. Fastest pitch in softball history. I just thought that was an interesting point. You guys have anything else before we wrap up?
No, look for our baseball preview coming out early next week.
Absolutely. And listen, we even posted Facebook Lives. We're getting with it here, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for commenting on them. We appreciate that. Comment on all the stuff that we do. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where a sport is so dumb that they have separation in games where you can't watch two at the same time, and they start up their freaking transfer portal during the middle of their tournament. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, like, share everything we do on Facebook and Instagram. Tell us what you want more of. Watch us on YouTube. Do all the things that we're asking you to do. Tell us more. We'll give you more. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.